Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed, so I call your name.
Welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. I'm Bob Ginsberg. I have Marta Kristen by my side, literally. And of course, Tom and Melissa Gould. Hello, guys.
Hello. Good to see you both.
You know, you missed the memo. We were all supposed to wear blue, but I don't.
Shades of blue.
You both have shades. Yeah, just like you're lighter than us. Yeah. In case you don't know, this show is dedicated to answering questions that you email us or call in. If you'd like to call in and talk and chat, we'd love to hear from you. The number here is 627-6008. 888-627-6008. Thanks, Tom, for that. I'd like to mention before we get started that we still do have openings for the October grief retreat in California. That retreat is for bereaved, you know, parents only. So if you know anybody that would gain some insight by attending, feel free to share that with them. The details are on our website. So we had some questions that came in already. And I guess we can get right to them. The first one was, can spirits that are already in the spirit world hear our prayers for them? And he makes a distinction by saying for them and not to them, particularly within the first few years after passing. So can spirits already in the spirit world hear our prayers for them? What say you guys?
I say, of course they can. I know everyone's sending their loved ones good wishes on the other side. And maybe this question came from someone who was concerned how their loved one might fare on the other side. And so are sending prayers for an easy transition or whatever is to come next in their, I want to say, lessons. What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, I'd have to say so. As long as you pray to them by name, I think that that's the important part, whether you're speaking to them or for them. If you speak their name, it will, as the song says, the echo will go through the spirit world, and they'll know. I believe so.
Yeah, I think so. I talk a lot to my parents and ask for their help, and I pray for them. I tell them how much I love them and how much I care and how thankful I am that they were in my life and that I know I will see them again.
Yes. Yeah.
And of course, when we say that they hear our prayers, it doesn't have to be prayers that are said verbally. It could be our thoughts. And so we believe that, yeah, they can communicate telepathically as they do with all of their people that have joined them on the other side, but also with us. So, I mean, that's how mediums work. You know, it's an exchange of thoughts, mind to mind. So I agree. The follow-up question to that, do our prayers for them help them in any way, or is there no difference?
I'd have to say yes, because our prayers are coming from love, and love is the energy of the universe. So if you're sending love to them, it's like filling their tank. You're giving them more energy to proceed.
Yeah.
Melissa, you were going to say something?
No, I was. Okay. Tom, I believe that's how it works.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that. Well, you know, we believe that their primary goal when they cross over, especially at the beginning, is to let us know that they still exist. So by us trying to communicate with them or praying to them or thinking about them or expressing our love helps them in the sense that they're happy that we know that they're still there, you know, as opposed to, you know, not believing that at all. So that, I mean, they don't want to see us suffer. So I think they hear our prayers. Question is, how long do they hear our prayers? They hear our prayers forever? I don't know. You know, we talk about that when people ask why the communications seem to wane as physical time as we know it, you know, gets longer. And I know we usually answer that by saying there's a lot of stuff to do. You know, they're evolving, they're traversing the universe. So it's not quite as important, I think, to be communicating forever.
Well, I think that it has more to do with your comfort, you know, the personal comfort. But I think they don't stop hearing you at all. I think that they're always with you. And as Tom said, it's about love. And love is just, it's something that is forever. And it can't be erased in any way. So whether it's in death or whether it's in life, love is the strongest emotion that we can have. And I don't think it ever dies. I don't think that it ever leaves us. And I think we can always send it out to our loved ones.
And I like that you said, think, Marta, because, you know, for our listeners, we're all just explorers. These are our theories based on what we've read, what we've talked about. Those in the professional field who have studied all of this extensively and what we hear from our spiritual mediums. So it's, you know, it's an exploration. We don't know any of this for certain. But the majority of what we've read and learned seems to align with these thoughts.
Yeah. You know, another question is, you know, how does our love and grief affect them? So I think we've just talked about the love part. But the grief part is something that gets asked a lot, you know, and that is because people worry that we're somehow holding them back or giving them discomfort if we're grieving, you know, too hard, because, you know, after all, they're not, from their perspective, they're not dead. You know, from our perspective, they are. So I don't think that we hold them back at all, but I think that they feel, just as they feel our love, they do feel our grief. I used to use that as a coping mechanism, you know, to try to alleviate my grief somewhat, you know, by thinking in those terms. You know?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I mean, they don't want you to grieve. I mean, it's understandable. You've got to. You do. That's just natural. But they, on their side, as you said, they're fine. And then when they come back with a message, the first thing they said is, you know, I'm great. And if they couldn't walk or couldn't see or had troubles in life, the first thing they say is, that's all gone now. And, you know, I can jump, I can fly, I can run. And they're in a place of great beauty and joy. And they know that they're going to see you when you leave this world. So they want nothing more than you to enjoy the rest of your life before you reunite again. And easier said than done, but yeah. But it's back. No, you're not holding them back. You're just making them wish you felt better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have felt the same, that the grief was so great that I didn't know that I could go forward. And what I kept getting, the message I kept getting is, we love you so much that we want you to be happy now.
Yeah.
And don't grieve. Don't put your life into that category. Take yourself outside of it and to reach out and live your life, because that's what we want for you. And that's the message I kept getting over and over and over again. And because I just wanted to sort of disappear. And I knew that was absolutely detrimental to my health and my daughter's health and their lives. And so I finally had to pick myself up and say, that's not what they want. The people I am grieving for want me to reach out and be happy and care about living and not focus on the passing and their being out of my life in the way that in the corporeal life. It's important. It's important to recognize. For me, it was absolutely imperative that I do that for myself and for them.
Yes. You know, people have mixed feelings about orbs that you've seen in photographs. When it's not a flash of light, it's just an orb that you can see. It has a pattern in it, almost a DNA. And many people think that is spirit imprinting on that photograph. And over the years, whenever I see a photograph with an orb, I save it into a folder. And when I look through that folder, I see that the most orbs I have captured on film have been like at my daughter's wedding, and people are dancing and there's music and they're having fun and there are orbs around that are celebrating with you. Yeah. So, they want you to go on and be happy. And so playing music, dancing, anything you can do to get yourself in a good state like that can help, and it will help in the grief as well.
I think it's difficult often for those who have been grieving someone that they feel, I don't know the right word, but, to show joy in other things. They don't want to be disrespectful to their loss, but, as their spirits get lifted, that's what I believe our loved ones want to see. They know our love hasn't changed for them, but they want us to get on with our lives and almost live for them, find joyous moments to celebrate.
I always bring this up every time this subject comes up, but life is like a Ferris wheel, and you're in one car of the Ferris wheel, and your loved one is in another car of the Ferris wheel, and then as it's going around, the Ferris wheel stops and they get off, but you're still on the ride. Now, they're down there below and they're waving to you. They're saying, hey, I had a great ride. I'll see you when you get off. And they want you to enjoy the rest of the ride. They don't want them to get off the ride and then you to sulk for the rest of the ride.
Yeah.
So as difficult as it is to take that advice, that is the advice to go on with your life and find joy.
Mm-hmm. I had a question. Does it cost spirit in some negative ways to interact? He's talking or she's talking in terms of energy. So when they do communicate, does that somehow sap their energy? I don't think so. I think energy is energy. I think there are certain things are harder to do than others. Like, for instance, manifesting themselves in physical form, like an apparition, that might take, I don't know if we could put it in physical terms, like we get tired if we exert ourselves. I don't know that they get tired by it. And what do you think?
We often hear when we are sit in on the group readings at some of our retreats that after an hour or so, the medium who might be conducting a group reading starts to feel their energy draining, and they might mention that, but I never hear them say the person they're the spirit they're communicating with is getting tired or feeling drained. So I think it's a human
It's condition. Definitely a physical thing. And oh geez, I'm battling a cold, so my mind is going off on me. But oh yes, from what I've read, on the other side, as your soul develops, as you go higher in the realms of souls, your purpose is to help those who aren't at your level to come up, to raise up with you. And so when the question says, are they being harmed by using their energy to come back to you, I'd say quite on the contrary. They're doing what a soul is supposed to be doing and helping another soul.
I was smiling when I read this question because you'll see why. This is about after-death communication. Is the following list accurate from least to most in terms of energy requirements for spirit to communicate to their loved ones? And he goes, dreams, thoughts, symbolic signs, fragrances, touches, moving physical objects, and apparitions. It goes back to the same thing. I mean, does coming to us in a he lists dreams as the least amount of energy. I'm not so sure that's the case. You know, I mean, I think the same amount of energy takes place in a dream or a thought or a fragrance or a touch, you know, I do agree with them on the last one, apparitions. That's what I just mentioned. You know, that may take a lot more energy, but what do you think? You think that people in spirit use up more energy with communicating with you in different ways?
No, you know? I don't. I think they just approaching me in at whatever time or whatever form. I mean, I dream of my parents. I dream of my late husband. I dream about my even my pets. And sometimes I've had apparitions. Sometimes I've awakened and they're right there in front of me. As if they were absolutely right, you know, real in body.
Yeah.
I think it's my reaching out more than, I think it's my, seeing them and thinking about them and caring about them and needing to have them with me so they come and yeah. They say, all right, here I am.
Right.
And it's always a wonderful
thing. And then, you know, they're entities of thought, right? So right now Tom's about to say something and he's thinking about it, but is it costing him any energy by expressing that thought? I don't think so, right?
That was my thought. I'm a little bothered by the thought that they have to expend too much energy to become an apparition. And I don't think it's about expending energy as much as it is learning how to do it.
Right.
It's pretty easy once you know, but you don't automatically know how to do all of these things. Becoming an apparition may take a lot more training and practice on the other side before they can actually come to Earth and do that. I don't want to talk about expending energy, just more how to do things.
Yeah.
The other part was on the list was a fragrance. Well, that comes to where the person who's being communicated with, there are many different kinds of sentience. If you're a clairsentient or that, you can see, some sentience can feel, some sentience can taste, some can smell. And it's not a matter of which one is a hierarchy. It's just a matter of which one the human subject is susceptible to.
You know, back to what you said a moment ago about taking the energy in that movie Ghost, when Patrick Swayze was in spirit, and I believe he was on a train, and he was encountering, he didn't know he was dead at first, but then he's encountering other spirits, I believe it was on a train, and he watched what they could do, and he tried to do it too, and it was sort of, I believe, like slamming himself. He, you know, he could see that they were able to go through the closed doorway, and he then was trying to do it as well and just slammed into the door like we would. So it was a skill that had to be developed in the movie. So who knows?
Yeah. I don't know. Shortly after my husband's death, maybe a few days later, he was right there. And I saw him. He was standing there. He was smiling. And I mean, there was no doubt about it. So I'm not an expert at any way on about this, but I know that he was there and he came multiple times, and that was shortly after he died. So almost right after. And so I was never afraid, of course. I felt very relieved and happy and I also had a great, many times when I smelled, I had this strong smell of him around me, and I would look and I would try and figure out what it was, but I knew that it was him, and it was so comforting. And I experienced that. That's gone now, but once in a while, I'll get that, you know, little bit of odor sweet smell. Yeah. Odor.
And that's something that we often ponder, because some people, as you said, can communicate right after. I mean, there are crisis apparitions where the person that sees the apparition doesn't even know that the person they're seeing has died, you know, and they're seeing them. So some people can, but it also may have something to do with the resonance between the two. It's not only him, you know, on the other side of you being able to receive it, you know. I mean, maybe not everybody's ready to receive it. Also, maybe he had help on the other side. This is how you do it. And he was a fast learner, you know. Yeah, yeah. So
also it indicate that he is an older soul, that it wasn't his first rodeo. He's been around the block a few times, and he knows these things. All when he gets to the other side, he goes, oh, here I'm back, and now I can do this like I used to.
So he always told me that we had many lives together before, and I said, yes, you were my warden. But that was obviously a tease, I think you're right. I think that he was an old soul, and I know my daughters are as well. They're old souls. They've been there before and are here now and are lights.
Well, the other question was, you know, can all spirits use all of those things in that list, you know? Can all spirits communicate that way? I don't think so. I think that each one has to be learned, you know, how to do it. And you mentioned mediums before. Not all mediums can receive information in all those forms. You know, some don't get fragrances. Some don't ever see, you know, whatever. So just as we are here, it may be similar there, you know. I think we always talk the dream visitations are the easiest for them, because you have that open channel when you're at certain stages of sleep, so they see a way, a conduit to get through. So this is not a question, but it's interesting. About 6 months before my kitty passed away, I was sitting on the sofa with my eyes closed. Just then, I felt her walk across my lap. I opened my eyes and she was resting at the other end of the sofa. I know that was her spirit and family coming for her.
Wow.
We don't forget our pets, just like Marta saw her deceased husband. We see her pets too. How many times have people, you know, called and told us they saw their dog or they saw their, you know, their cat. So how do they do it? You know, I mean, how do they manifest themselves the same way I guess we do? You know, consciousness is consciousness.
Yes.
But who helps them out? Are there dog mediums on the other side that help out these dogs? I don't know. Or the cats, you know. Does anyone know what happens in the case of babies who are aborted? I guess in terms of what happens to their soul.
Well, we don't know, but we can speculate. I think there's a special place for those babies. And perhaps when we think about what we read in that book we recommend often, Testimony of Light, it sounded as though caregivers who were, those individuals who were caregivers, let's say nurses or in the medical field caring for infants in NIC units or those who do pass, I think those kind of spirits may also have that role on the other side, or that others gain those skills, because I think those who examine past lives hear about a lot of different types of professions that they may have held. So I truly believe that babies, whether they were aborted, whether they miscarried, are cared for on the other side. Whether they continue to grow and develop, I don't know. I don't know. We can only speculate about that.
Well, I kind of feel that a soul is a soul. Whether you come back to this planet as a cat, you come back as a baby, you come back as a horse, that's your soul occupying a physical form that will help them in their development. And we've also heard about the contract that you sign, that you agree to before you come into the physical form, that you know when you come here how long you're going to be here. Innately, you know that. And, we don't consciously know that, but so you sign up because the mother or the father or, you know, the family member that needs to learn from an abortion or from a miscarriage, you're a soul saying, I'll go back to Earth and I'll give them that lesson. And, you know, then I'll be right back, you know, basically. But I don't think that makes any difference in the soul itself as being a viable entity.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, the soul really doesn't have any age. So that aborted fetus, the soul of that aborted fetus could have lived to be 100 in a previous life. So and that was a hard thing when I first started studying all this stuff that I was having trouble with, is that, you know, if we live in a purposeful, meaningful universe, what purpose, you know, does a fetus who didn't come to, you know, only lived a few months serve in the bigger, you know, scheme of things? But the spiritual answer is what Tom just said. It's a lesson for the parents, or, you know, for others, you know, that, you know, just the brief appearance made them think or may have changed their life in some strange way. So it's a difficult concept.
I think especially with miscarriages, and where you feel such great loss after so much hope. And I think that, you know, you just pray that, or hope and wish that it will have some kind of viability afterwards. Mm. And I think it does, for sure.
Well, if you think it does, then it does. Well, you're listening to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. And if you'd like to join in and discuss anything with us, the number here is 888-627-6008. We were just talking about free will and destiny, basically. And so here's the question. I've never made up my mind which I believe, whether we have free will or whether our lives are predetermined. I had a reading with one of the Forever Family certified mediums recently, and I have no doubt that she had my recently passed husband with us. At one stage during the reading, something was said which caused the medium to remark, "That's interesting, because I do believe in free will." The medium said, my husband responded, "Believe me, when you get here, you'll realize that there is no such thing."
Oh. So,
it would be I'd be interested to hear our comments on this concept of free will versus destiny, especially regarding her experience. Even the mediums will, in the spiritual community, nobody denies, that free will exists, and free will can change the course of events. But can free will, can it be both? Can things be organized and we have free will, to change it? So I have my own thoughts. I know you guys have yours. So,
well, I think we're destined, as I said, we're talking before about the contract when you come of life here, that they say, well, you're at 26, you're going to pass away and come back. So you don't have free will to change that. But while you are here, you have a lot of free will to change the path that you take before you get there. And that's the learning experience, because I'm currently in the middle of a book that by an author that Bob had interviewed on his show. It's Dr. Newton, who does past life regressions, and through hypnosis, he claims to have spoken to the spirit that's in between lives. And just what I was reading today, they were talking about, it's so beautiful over there, and it's joyful, and this love and everything caring, it's just a wonderful place, and you really don't want to leave. What if you are a spirit and you refuse to come back to Earth? And the spirit was kind of laughing at that, saying, well, yeah, you don't have to come back to Earth, but the experience that you get while you're in the physical world will enhance your development a lot quicker than if you just stayed in the beautiful, calm, loving atmosphere. You wouldn't necessarily grow as quickly. So people, and the one spirit says, well, there was this guy, Mark, and he didn't want to come back at all. But eventually he did, because he realized that I have more value to my own spiritual development by going through the physical world. And as we all know, living in the physical world really isn't a picnic the whole time. And there's a lot of pain, and there's a lot of struggle and strife. And it's how you handle those struggles and strife is what will help in the growth of your soul.
Yeah. And the comment that the medium communicated from her deceased husband, was that, believe me, when you get here, you realize there is no such thing, referring to free will. And that's, I'm open to the possibility that what seems like free will in the chaotic world in which we live makes sense when we have a different spirit perspective, when we're on the other side. Maybe we get to see a complete picture, which we can't possibly see, while we're here. So maybe that's an explanation.
I don't know. Free will, that's such a huge question. a huge dilemma. I mean, when I've been asked by people, would you change your life if you had to do it over? And I always say no, because I've suffered, but I've also had great joy. And, you know, one sort of answers the other in many ways. And years ago, excuse me, I came upon a Sufi saying that said, the greatest freedom is no choice. And in some ways, we don't have free will, because we do need to take care of each other. We need to take care of our children and our parents and our pets and the world. And so in that way, I don't think there's free will. I mean, we all have a choice to make, of course, and we try and make the right one. But there are some that you just must do. Choices that you must make, and it's the responsible thing to do. So I don't know, free will. It's a, you know, it's the existential question that we all have to live with.
Yeah. And if you've read Eckhart Tolle, he talks about, you know, things happen to you, and it's how you react. If something like road rage, somebody cuts you off, and your immediate steam comes out and you want to aggressively react to it, and so many people go way overboard with that. But if in Eckhart Tolle's philosophy is that you recognize it and see that, okay, I'm having a human experience now, and the anger I feel, I have a choice not to feel that anger, that you're going to feel it, but you're not going to get absorbed by it. You recognize that I'm feeling this feeling and it's not productive for me. So I will stand back and observe it happening and then remove myself from it. And that's where you get, and that's the life lesson. But if you get consumed with the anger every time somebody does you dirty, the anger, and there's an old expression too, anger is a poison that you drink and expect somebody else to get sick. The more you get angry, the more it's hurting you. And so you recognize anger is coming in. Oh, there it is. It's a human thing. I'm going to put it right there. I'm going to stand back and I'm going to just observe it. And that there's where the lesson lies. And if you can get to a place in life where you can do that, I think that when you get to the other side, you will have advanced yourself.
Well, I'm not there, but I know Bob is. he's teaching me.
You're in trouble, aren't you? I've read that it's not good to try to contact a person too often. They mean a person in spirit. Is that true? And if so, then do they stop sending signs? I don't think that it makes any difference trying to contact. They probably want the contact as much as we do. So I don't think it's a situation like they get pissed off that would leave me alone already, and they stop sending signs. That's a human thing, you know.
Yeah, I'm reminded of a video that was made for the Forever Family Foundation, and a woman was talking about how every night she kisses her husband's picture before going to bed. And then she got a reading where the medium says, yes, and he's there with you every night when you kiss his picture. Uh-huh. So there you go. I mean, every night, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I know the array of photos I have in our living room. And the most prominent one is my mom sitting up straight, eyes looking forward, making eye contact, kind of like, what's going on? And I don't know how many times a day, you know, I give her a nod, or when I take a glass of wine into the bedroom at night and I, cheers, Mom. And sometimes it's like, Melissa, that's enough.
Well, let's not discount the possibility that you just like to drink wine at night.
Bingo.
Using mom as an excuse. Come on. We see right through you.
No, that is not.
What
I learned my drinking skills from my parents.
All right. So here's an unusual one. Would appreciate a possible answer as to what happened to me some nights ago. I felt a very painful embrace while I was sleeping. It scared me very much. The only thing I thought of doing was to pray, and the sensation went away. Nothing else happened after that incident, except for me not being able to go back to sleep. This embrace only happened for a very short period of time, but felt very intense and painful. What can you possibly believe this was? Never experienced something like this, and scared me to say the least. There are a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it felt an embrace. I mean, is it possible that a loved one in spirit was hugging you too hard? You know, I mean,
they were learning how to do it, and it's like Bullwinkle.
Right. And then,
I know that's true.
You know, I mean, I haven't heard of that. But then the other people would say, you know, we don't talk about it often, but that there's negative energy in the universe and there's a negative spirit. That would be pretty unusual, you know. And then usually people report things that continually happen, you know, like hauntings and things of that nature. So I don't know. I mean, you know, and the other thing to consider is you could have been having what we call a regular dream, you know, and although, you know, they can feel very real and intense and physical sensations, but maybe it wasn't spirit. It's just coming from your own, brain that's rehashing stuff that happened. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think there are all sorts of possibilities with that. If they were sleeping in a haunted hotel, which one of these days I'm going to experience. Yes, it happened. But this does not sound like that. And I apologize if the person who's concerned hears me say that, because I don't want to make fun of it at all. But you're right. It could be a number of things. You know, it could be, as you said, a dream just giving you that sensation. Do any of you recall anything physical like that in a dream of any kind? Like feeling being touched or your hair pulled or being injured and feeling it? Is that something you recall from any dreams you've had?
I haven't had pain in the dreams. I know I had a visitation from my father when he first passed, that he was sort of brought to me kind of like a Frankenstein in a way, that he just stood up straight and I put my hand on his chest and I felt that.
And that was a sensation with your...
Yeah, I definitely felt I was feeling his chest, but it wasn't painful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not...
Well, I felt something the other night of somebody choking me, but Marta was upset with me during the day, so I
would never do that.
I think she really was joking me.
Look at you. Keep all scissors and knives away. No, it sounds so negative. I don't like to, I want people to recognize that if something comes to them, that it's a gift. And rather than being a negative, fearful experience, because I think our loved ones only want us to feel that. And, you know, if someone's hugging you too tight, then, you know, you say, oh, that's just a little too tight. But I understand that you want me to know that I'm you're here with me. And I think that that's more the answer than anything.
Yeah.
There isn't any kind of negativity that I feel or I've ever experienced in a you know, a sense of anyone coming to me that you know, was dangerous or hurtful.
This listener writes, I'm writing to ask if during our transition to the other side at death, our team of spirit guides and angels will be present with us. If so, will we immediately recognize and know them as our beloved eternal friends? I mean, if you take, you know, the reports from near-death experiencers, very often they're greeted by loved ones who they recognize, you know, immediately. And it seems that not only in NDEs, but in the channel writings and everything else we could learn from, that people almost all the time are greeted by people that have passed, you know, before them that they knew. So,
and you know, don't you feel, Bob, that even if it's, they, like somebody worries that their child didn't know some of their relatives that passed before them, but don't you feel that once you cross over and you're pure spirit, that recognition is just there? It didn't have to be, that's not in human form that they knew the person, but now on the other side, the spirits are all recognizable.
Yeah, that's the other thing that I always battle with. I mean, so you have literally billions and billions of souls, you know, that cross over, you know, and billions and billions of souls that reside, you know, in other dimensions. How, you know, do they know when we are, you know, crossing over? And it's something similar to what you described, was it's just, we're bonded and on the same frequency, and they just know. That's why they come in the end of life experiences, the deathbed visions, that they come. How do they know exactly, you know, when somebody's getting ready to cross? It's an unconscious summoning, you know, that takes place, and you know, probably to do with love. You know, the love binds us and also enables them to know. I often use the analogy of watching the penguins, you know. It always blew my mind, you know, they go to this island where there's literally a half a million penguins where they go to mate, and they mate, and then I guess, it's the male, I guess it was, that goes off and swims thousands of miles to get fish to bring back, you know, for the offspring, and then they come back after 6 months or whatever, and they walk on this island with half of a million penguins that look exactly the same, yeah. And immediately they find their mate and their offspring. It, you know, how does that happen? You know, so I don't know, but I always think that it's something similar to that in the spirit.
Also, you know, we've heard that you have a spirit guide, at least one spirit guide that's with you your entire life. So they're with you already, and they know when you're about to come and join them again. So they'll be there for you. And I know we have people who with near-death experiences who said, well, Jesus met me there. And I think that's the other thing, is that they know what will comfort you. So when you've crossed to the other side, spirit can manifest itself into a form that would be comfortable to you. So if you're deeply religious and you cross over to the other side and you see Jesus, you'll feel better about it.
Okay. While we still have some time, I know we're getting close, but let's take a call. We have Amul from Ohio. Hello.
Hello. Oh. Yes. Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I had a question. Some mediums have told me that the spirits, you know, which come during the session, they can trick you. They can trick the medium. You know, they are not the one they pretend to be. Yeah. You have any thoughts on that? What's your experience?
So, you know, you mean there's a spirit coming through that's pretending to be somebody else, maybe somebody connected to
right.
You know, I guess that raises the question of having mischievous spirits, you know. I mean, I've heard this the same thing. None of the mediums that I've ever worked with or any of the readings that I witnessed have encountered that. But, you know, I mean, we can't say definitively, you know, sometimes good mediums don't connect to somebody, you know, to the somebody that the spirit recognizes. So I guess that's a possibility, but it rarely, you know, comes up. So I really haven't heard. I don't really think it's something that happens very often.
That's interesting. I haven't heard. Have you, Tom?
No, that's new to me.
Yeah.
Again, like Bob says, we can't definitively say one way or the other from lack of evidence. It just logically does not, it doesn't flow that would be happening. But I think that's more possibly the medium trying to, I know a lot of mediums will get some information and then try to interpret it themselves through their own experience, and that could skew the actual message that's coming through.
Yeah, but do you know anybody that's happened to?
Yeah, actually, well, I don't have any psychic ability, but I know a lot. I have come to know several of them, and many mediums also. And they all tell me that, oh, you know, anybody can become medium, you just try. So where I live, you know, there is a, what do you call a church, Unitarian? There's a church group, you know, which does mediumship.
Yeah.
Of their survey.
Yeah, the spiritual church.
Yeah,
spiritualist church.
Yeah, right. So the president of that church, you know, I met her, and she said, you know, you don't have to be, you know, you don't have to have inherent psychic ability. Anybody can do it. So as a curiosity, I said, okay, I'll take your class. So I started taking the class. And so during the class, she told us the one time that, you know, it is possible that some spirit may come and pretend to be. So she was saying that if you ask the spirit three times to identify itself, then they have to identify correctly. That's what she was telling us.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, it is, I don't necessarily agree that everybody can become a medium. I think we all have that ability, but in varying degrees. But, you know, it takes a lot of training and a lot of work, but you have to start with some strong inherent ability. But,
that's what I thought too.
I mean, it's easy to say that anybody can do it, but I can't. So
we have a very good certified medium who says that all the time, and I respond to that saying, "Well, yeah, everybody can play the violin, but how many people can play it at Carnegie Hall? You know, it's not just pick it up and play it, and you're all of a sudden Stravinsky." A lot of practice.
Well, thank you. I mean, we have to move on, but thanks for calling. And
okay, sir. Thank you, man. Thank you very much.
Take care. I know we're just about out of time. We had another question about parallel lives and whether or not that suggested completely different versions of ourselves elsewhere in different dimensions. And since we have free will and our lives could be completely different, I can't say no.
But we can say one day we will all find out.
Yeah, we can say that. Well, we're going to end with our global peace prayer. Let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this. to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, and to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man as well as the earth and its environment.
And I'd like to say our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to accept it.
Thanks, everyone, and we'll talk to you during the next show. Have a wonderful weekend, and good evening.
Good night.
Good night.